Welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. We're dedicated to sharing Great Loop information and inspiration with those actively cruising, planning for, or dreaming about a Great Loop adventure. This is Kim Russo. I'm the director of AGLCA. Today we'll be talking with Bill Mahan, who is with the Florida Sea Grant Extension. We'll talk about the work his organization does, and in particular, we're going to talk a little bit about their recent project to help rid Florida waters of some of the troublesome derelict vessels that are out there. But before we go forward with talking with Bill, I do want to take a moment to recognize and to thank our Admiral sponsors who support AGLCA at the highest level. They are Curtis Stokes & Associates, Dog River Marina, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, Skipper Bob Publications, United Yacht Sales of the Carolinas, and Waterway Guide Media. As always, we encourage all of the loopers and other listeners out there to support these businesses who support the Great Loop. So with that out of the way, I'd like to introduce Bill. Bill, thanks for joining me today.
Hey, good morning, Kim. Good to be here.
Let's start off, if we can. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do for Sea Grant.
Okay, well, I'm what they would call a University of Florida IFAS extension agent, and I work within the Florida Sea Grant program, which is just one of several major programs that they offer through extension. And I'm in a relatively new position. I've been with Sea Grant now for 20-plus years, but for the past 2 years, I've been headquartered here in Panama City in the panhandle of Florida, and have an assignment that focuses on boating and waterway issues.
Okay. And for our listeners that maybe are not familiar with Sea Grant, tell us a little bit more about that program and its mission.
Well, Florida Sea Grant's mission is to support an integrated approach to research, education, and extension with a focus that conserves coastal resources and enhances economic opportunities for the people here in Florida. And I guess in a nutshell, and this covers extensions in general, how extension programs work, it's to bring the research-based information that's generated at the universities and labs across the country to the local folks so that they can use it to, you know, for their business or, you know, to improve their life just based on the latest scientific information.
Mm-hmm. And other states besides Florida have Sea Grant programs as well, correct?
Oh, yes, yes. In fact, this is the 50th year of Sea Grant. It first started, President Johnson signed it into law in 1966. The Florida program actually came about in 1976, so we're in our 40th year as a program. And it covers, I guess there's 33 programs nationwide, so you'd find a Sea Grant program in every coastal state in the United States, as well as the Great Lakes, and even Lake Champlain has a Sea Grant program.
So you do have a very robust website with lots of resources about the coastal areas, but specifically for boaters. Tell us a little bit about some of the projects that you've been involved with that focus on boating.
Well, I guess a big one that we just wrapped up the end of last year in November is we coordinated what was called the National Working Waterfronts and Waterways Symposium, where we had people from all over the U.S. and Canada in Tampa for a week-long conference to really focus on different boating issues and working waterfront issues from, you know, all over the U.S. and in Canada. So that was a neat program that we did.
Mm-hmm.
But at the more, I guess, statewide level, we have a boating and waterways specialist who does a lot of boating planning for different counties around the state, and we have what is referred to as a work action group, or a WAG, and so we have a boating WAG that is comprised of agents and specialists, and maybe I should explain that. Agents are faculty members of the University of Florida who focus on more local issues. Most agents cover from, say, 1 to 3 counties, whereas our specialists are usually housed on the main campus or at research centers around the state, and they have a statewide focus and responsibility.
What are some of the local issues that the agents focus on in different areas?
Well, again, it depends on the local needs. One of the neat things in my mind about Extension is it's a bottom-up driven program. We do a needs assessment at the local level and find out what kind of things we can help the local community on based on our area of expertise, whether that's, say, local recreational fishing, commercial fishing. We have people working in aquaculture, certainly boating, planning and zoning issues. So it covers a wide range of topics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what some of the resources you provide for recreational boaters might be?
Sure. I know some of our folks do, I guess, some newsletters that are focused on boating issues, and they'll cover things like the local fishing regs and seasons and changes to the rules and regulations at the both state and federal, because we have a lot of boaters here that fish inshore, but we also have a lot that go offshore. And at least in the Gulf region of Florida, the state waters go out to 9 miles, unlike most places where it's 3 miles for the state waters. And so here our state waters go out to 9, and then the state waters, the state waters go out that far, and then it goes into federal waters. And so we do have a lot of boaters that are within state waters, even though they're out, you know, say 8 miles. And mm-hmm. the regulations can be different, and sometimes it gets very confusing. So we try to keep our boaters and fishermen up to date on rules and regs, and we also do that for the commercial folks as well, because they get into the same bind with the constantly mm-hmm. changing rules and regs.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know that anchoring in Florida is a big issue, and I know you've done some work with derelict vessels, which seems to sometimes get wrapped up in the overnight anchoring issue.
Yes.
But Sea Grant has worked on the pilot program, correct?
Not sure what you mean by the pilot program.
The pilot program for anchoring, where some municipalities have been able to set some restrictions or some and set up some mooring. I'm not sure if that's not something you and I have talked about, so I'm not sure if you've been involved in that effort.
Right.
But I know that you've been involved in the derelict vessels, and AGLCA has kind of followed this issue for our members because, of course, anchoring is important to them, and they do spend a lot of time in Florida.
Right.
So the legislature has been looking at that, of course, and this year the derelict vessel bill and the overnight anchoring bill do seem to be separated, which is good news. Last year, the overnight anchoring issue was kind of wrapped up with the derelict boating. But I know you've done a lot in your particular area to help resolve the problem of the derelict vessels that are essentially abandoned and need to be removed from the water at some point, which is always a struggle for funding and for action to be taken on that. So tell us what you've done to help resolve that issue in your particular area.
Okay. Well, one of the projects when I first came here, and I've been here just over 2 years now, was I was given an assignment to sort of develop a web-based anchorage, inventory of the Emerald Coast region, which goes from Escambia County in Pensacola to Mexico Beach here in Bay County. And so as I was finishing that, I was asking and doing a needs assessment through the local marine businesses and marine resource users. So I was talking to boaters and fishermen and marina operators and marine parts stores and, you know, our boating I guess, brokers and just a whole host of folks, and asking them what I could do to help them with their work. And a good number of them brought up the topic of derelict vessels. And I've come to find out it's been a long problem in Bay County. And so last April, I sort of put together a small group, and we had an organizational meeting of what we had called the Bay County Derelict Vessel Work Group. And the group met, and we started developing some plans and goals, and most of which focused really at the beginning trying to get some funds to get the derelict vessels removed. But over time, the group grew, and we sort of filled in the blanks as far as folks we needed to help us. And we were lucky enough to have a marine salvager who, from the get-go, wanted to do something now rather than later. And we finally reached the point where Gerald Nelson with Southern Marine Services said he just needed to do something, and he was willing to start pulling some of the boats out using his money. But he needed help to get all the proper documentation done, and so our FWC representative said that the state Fish and Wildlife Commission would certainly work to make sure all the vessels were properly documented. In fact, they helped prioritize the ones that they felt were boating safety issues, especially ones that were sunk and to the point where if we just got a little bit of chop on our water, you might not even see it because the water would be, you know, over the hull, and it was just a big safety hazard. And so things started developing quickly, and we started pulling boats.
That's great news, especially because so many places have this issue and seem to have trouble getting the funds and the resources and people together to do it. So it's outstanding that you've been able to put that team together. I'm going to take a quick break right here and play a message from one of our sponsors. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more into the specifics about who's been involved, how many boats you've been able to pull, and whether the project is ongoing. So we'll be back in just a moment.
Winter Harbor Marina is located on the Oneida River, 1.5 miles west of Oneida Lake in Brewerton, New York, just minutes from Syracuse International Airport. Winter Harbor offers the lowest diesel fuel and gas prices from New York City to Canada. If you find a lower posted documented price, they will match it. Their amenities include complimentary courtesy vehicle, 24-hour pay-at-the-pump fueling, dockside water and cable TV, pristine bathrooms and showers, and emergency haul-out service. For more information, call 315-676-9276 or visit www.winterharborllc.com. Winter Harbor is a proud commander sponsor of AGLCA.
Welcome back to Great Loop Radio. We're talking today with Bill Mahan, who is a Florida Sea Grant Extension agent, and he's sharing some details with us on how he's been able to work with a team to get some of the derelict vessels in his area out of the water. So, Bill, let's talk a little bit more about the pieces that had to come together to make this happen. What are some of the resources that you needed and that the team members you were able to bring in?
Oh, sure. Well, initially we had, I'll say, a pretty good representation of private business along with some of our city and county department people, as well as we have a Florida State University campus here that's very active on the water. And so they were involved with us. But we had a group of nine, and we sort of realized that we needed to get a representative from, we have a Navy base nearby, we have an Air Force base, we have a Coast Guard group. And so we started adding key agency folks like that, as well as other businesses and municipalities. So we ended up with representatives from our Bay County Boatyard, which is sort of a place where they do towing and pull the boats out for maintenance and do that. We had the Panama City Community Redevelopment Agency, who I found out had been working very hard over the years to clean up some of the bayous that are around Panama City. And just back in like 2013, 2014, they were successful in getting funds, and they had removed about 20 vessels from the bayous that had become derelict. And then we also had representatives from the Bay County Planning and Zoning Department. I mentioned the Coast Guard, but we had a representative from the Marine Safety Detachment here in Panama City. Of course, University of Florida Extension folks, myself and Scott Jackson, who does a lot with artificial reefs here. Panama City Marina was represented. We had the Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission, Southern Marine Services, which was our marine salvager, and I think I mentioned the Naval Support Activity Base here in Panama City, Tyndall Air Force Base, the County Emergency Management Services got involved with us, and then that grew, although they're not official members of the work group, but we ended up working with the County Solid Waste Department, Road and Bridge Department. We had a private contractor who does land clearing, Alan Bird. His group helped us with supplying dump trucks and drivers when we started trying to dispose of the vessels.
Mm-hmm. So the private companies that you've mentioned, and I appreciate you giving them a shout-out because they deserve some recognition for helping with this, did most or all of those contribute this, you know, to contribute their services free of charge to the effort?
Well, nobody charged, you know, anybody within the group. So, mm-hmm. yes, all that was done, I'll say, in-kind services because, mm-hmm. you know, as Gerald was willing to, I'll say, take most of the finances on his shoulders because he was doing the actual refloating and then hauling the boats to our staging area, which was a county county boat ramp. So, I mean, he certainly put most of the finances in, but everyone else, I mean, Fish and Wildlife was donating their time and doing the documentation, and the county donated its time and waived tipping fees, and they ended up supplying us with a excavator would crush the vessels and then load them up into the dump trucks. And they also ended up donating dump trucks and the drivers as well as the cleanup crew once we had our what we called our derelict vessel crush day.
Mm-hmm. So, Bill, if all of these resources hadn't come together and, you know, essentially donated their resources for the project, any estimate as of what this would have cost if everyone, you know, everyone was had to be paid for their services?
Well, I know Gerald kept track of his costs because everybody, we've tried to keep track of everyone's contribution because some of the people at the state derelict vessel program had told us that if we have everything documented, there may be an opportunity to get some, you know, money's back for all the, mm-hmm. the work that was done. And so Gerald's, his, you know, I guess, direct costs were about $38,000. And he said if mm-hmm. he was doing that as, say, a regular business and, you know, making sure he's covering all the overhead costs and things like that, that would be closer to $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
And that was for 14 vessels,
mm-hmm.
and then the county, they estimated the waive tipping fee was a couple thousand dollars, and then the dump truck and excavators, you know, a couple more thousand, so I think their estimate was about $10,000 worth of mm-hmm. time and services. And then the Fish and Wildlife Commission, it says it typically costs between $300 and $500 to fully document a vessel. So in the 14 vessels, you know, we're talking in another $5,000, $6,000 there. So you know, I guess we're looking $120,000 to maybe $150,000 for pulling the 14 vessels.
It adds up quickly, doesn't it? Which is one of the reasons I'm so impressed with this effort that you were able to get in there and get this done, which is a huge benefit to all of the boaters using the waters in those areas. Since the 14 have been pulled, is the project continuing?
Yes, yes. We're still looking for money. I mean, some of the funds we were looking for initially was one to have money to continue to pull vessels, so we're going to look for funding from the state or feds for that, and we're also pursuing some local funding options. But we also want to work with the county and look at doing a derelict vessel amnesty day with the county and through solid waste, because in our area we have a good number of boats, say, that aren't in the water, but they're in backyards on trailers, and they're just falling apart kind of thing. And part of what our concern is if we get a storm, and we haven't had a major storm hit us since Hurricane Opal, and that was like in 1998, that these boats will, I mean, just end up destroyed and strewn all over our waterways and, you know, literally throughout the cities and communities. So we're going to try to make a major effort to get those potential problems disposed of before they are storm season. And we also want to document all our at-risk vessels, because we still have a number of at-risk vessels that are floating out there, and they are, say, moored or anchored or tied, but we have no idea who they belong to, and they just sit there and create.
Right. Well, Bill, I think we're going to wrap it up there. I know that you have some travel coming up ahead of you in the next few minutes, so I want to let you go. But I do want to thank you again to you and your team for putting this together. As I said, it really benefits all of the boaters, either resident in Florida or the transients like our loopers, many of them who are coming through. Makes the waterways safer and cleaner for everyone. So thank you for your efforts there, and I'm so impressed with what you've been able to accomplish without funding. So thank you again for that. What is your website if people are looking for more information about Florida Sea Grant?
Oh, well, you could probably just Google Florida Sea Grant College Program, and it'll probably lead you to a couple different links in the university. There's what we call Solutions for Your Life, which is our main extension, I'll say, web page, where you can look at all the different programs that are offered, including Sea Grant. And then Florida Sea Grant has a standalone web page. And we also have a Facebook page if you want to look for us on Facebook.
Okay, perfect. And I have been to the website, and there are lots of resources for boaters there. There's a specific section for boaters, since Sea Grant does several different things along the waterways.
Right.
So, Bill, once again, thank you.
Hey, you're very welcome. Thank you.
Did you have another comment? I don't want to cut you off too soon.
Oh, no, I was going to even mention we do have even a little bit of a legal team that works on boating issues. We have Tom Ankerson, who's with the University Law School, and he's been working with us for years and helping track. And, I mean, he was on top of the restricted anchoring regulation or bill that was submitted. And one of the things that he worked with us on was to document how using those setbacks, I want to say it was 150 feet, maybe 200, that it would literally prevent any kind of anchorages in certain areas because of the waterway, you know. And so we wanted to be on top of that, and of course it didn't come out that way in the bill. They're just looking at a few selected areas, but I know there's
this year's bill.
Right.
Yep.
So I know there's some
issues. Following this year's bill as well. Yeah. and we'll see where that turns out. Lots happening with that actually right now, and we'll probably do an episode of this podcast on that fairly soon, depending on how the rest of the Florida legislature session works out. So, Bill, again, thank you. I appreciate it. For our listeners, we will be back again next week with another episode of Great Loop Radio. Until then, safe cruising.